December 22nd, 2025. Welcome back to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series. This is episode 2, and it's kind of our bonus episode, our 4-pack. And for those of you just tuning in, check out the first set of podcasts with Waukesha South Varsity Basketball Coach Lee Montez, talking about an exciting year that they're having with some of the young talent they have. But speaking of talent, I'm honored to have my longtime classmate and dear friend, Brian Sullivan. And at the last segment, we were talking about a debate we had in a high school class on currents of American thought. And it was during the Reagan-Mondale campaign. And Brian had just obliterated me in a debate, but, you know, respectful and, again, using metrics. And but I still, you know, I probably acknowledge defeat, but I still refuse to, like, give up on my undying love for Ronald Reagan, you know, at the time. I mean, he was a great communicator. And unfortunately, I think that was probably a precedent for what we've inherited now, where, like, Donald Trump can do no wrong in so many people's eyes, and that the way that information is channeled, it's frightening. So what do you say? What's your take on all this from where you're at, Brian?
Yeah, I tend to be a pragmatic centrist, and I don't feel I have a home in either party anymore.
Same here. Yes, thank you. That's the other side of it.
So it seems to get worse, and I forget what that machine in physics is called, where there's the, you know, the five steel balls, and you pull one back and you know, hits the other balls, and the one on the other end flies off in the other direction. I think that's where we are now, and the amplitude of, you know, the direction that the ends go is now increasing. So I'm not, you know, I'm not sure that how we get the toothpaste back in the tube to be able to disagree in an agreeable manner, because, you know, back in Reagan's days, they, not saying this was better, but the politicians could actually get something done. You know, Tip O'Neill was the, you know, Speaker of the House, and he and Reagan could get on the phone and work things out, even though they disagreed about everything vehemently. Yeah. They were able to make progress for the benefit of the American people in the end. Now, you know, some of that, depending on where you sat, if you were an ethnic or religious minority, you probably weren't really happy in 1984 to 1988.
Yeah.
There was at least an ability to communicate across the aisle that we seem to have lost. So,
yeah,
I don't know what resets that, frankly. It just doesn't seem like, and it's not just politics. It's, you know, it's personal, you know, communication has been lost as well. So,
and you'll appreciate this. I developed kind of a little straw poll, and it's mostly for young people. And it was all based on, we were in Denver last summer for my youngest daughter's softball tournament. And, our oldest daughter and her boyfriend at the time came with us. And on one day off, we did a hiking tour of Red Rocks, the famous amphitheater. And I start mentioning U2 and the live album from that, and really how U2 kind of put Red Rocks on the worldwide map. It's obviously regionally very, you know, an attraction. But my oldest daughter and her boyfriend and their, you know, seniors and juniors in college, they had no idea who U2 was, which was astonishing to me. And so then I started a little straw poll, and it's question number one: before he was assassinated, had you ever heard of Charlie Kirk? I personally haven't. I have a vague recollection, but he, you know, it was not one of my influences anyway, but obviously a very big influencer. And most of the young people I talk to say yes. Even if they didn't like him, they knew who he was. They were, you know. And then the second question is, have you ever heard of the Irish rock band U2? And it's almost like 90% say no. Like, who? You know, like, what are you talking about? And it's just, I think it's a good indication of the fact that all the information we get is channeled through, like, social media and the streams, and that the days of our youth where you had basically the three TV stations.
Yeah.
And then two newspapers, depending on the size of the city you lived in, that you had more centralized and maybe not the most objective media, but at least everyone was kind of getting news from the same source. Or it just seems like now, while it is great that we have access to all this information, how that information is being used or how it's being it's just tragic, and it's really it's irresponsible, and you know, it's all the things. I know I'm preaching to the choir. But do you see in Canada, is there any, in terms of news or media, is it better there? Your experience?
I wouldn't say it's better. You've got CBC, so you've got, you know, a government owned both TV and radio station that's supposed to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the same sorts of access to, you know, the citizen journalists that we have, and the same access to information and misinformation. So I don't think there's any real difference in communication. I think I've seen typically in Canada, they're, although they would never admit this, they're a trend. They're a trend follower. So their politics are getting nasty as ours did. So they're a little bit behind that curve, but they're just as nasty. And, you know, so they've got a more than two-party system that's more fractured, and people aren't any closer together on issues, basic issues in Canada, as they are in the United States. They don't have a Trump figure as the head of government, but below that level, they are just as dysfunctional as the U.S. is. So they don't.
Yeah.
Canada doesn't get a lot more done than our dysfunctional government. Their government is just as dysfunctional, whether it's federally or provincially. They don't have an insulter in chief. You know, they don't. Mark Carney is a businessman. He was the head of he ran Royal Bank of Scotland, or he ran one of the big banks, and he ran one of the bigger investment firms, Brookfield Infrastructure in Canada. So he's a straight, you know, out of central casting business CEO type prime minister.
Right.
But they have had the same types of problems, and they don't have the economy to lift them that we do. So they've had immigration, they've had immigration issues. They've had the same, you know, East versus West issues. They've had, you know, liberal versus conservative issues. So they've got the same, same sorts of problems we have.
Sure. What do you think? And obviously this is not a new question or a new idea, but I would think that when you given the percentage of Americans that aren't affiliated with either of the two major parties, do you think the feasibility of a formidable third party being created is there? One of our civic media show hosts, and he's a former legislator at the state level, he had a good point, is that for that to be successful, it's got to start at the local level. Usually when these things happen, like you think of Ross Perot, is like it starts at the national level, and there's no base there to support it, just a kind of a cult of personality. But what are your thoughts on that, Brian?
Well, again, using Canada as an example, in British Columbia, there was no Conservative Party of British Columbia until the last, you know, people got so fed up with what they call the New Democrats in British Columbia, that the Conservatives formed out of almost ether in the last election, which was about 18 months ago. And they didn't really have a political machine. They didn't have a local machine. They just ran candidates as pure opposition to the New Democrats. And they managed to win 40s, almost flipped the government. They won 48% of the seats.
Okay.
But 18 months later, the party's falling apart, you know, so the,
because
there isn't a history, there isn't a machine, there isn't that local support. It was just an opposition. It was a reaction to bad governance by the party in power. So I think that we've seen that in this country, which is there's room for a centrist party that represents the, you know, probably the 70, when you look at any divisive issue, probably 60 to 70% of the people agree on a reasonable range of outcomes. And it's just the 10 to 15% on either side that insist on kind of the really divisive characterization of those issues. But there's just no machine to house the 70%. They're just, I don't know why that is.
Yeah. We need some Plunkets at the local level. We need kind of like the antithesis or the counterpart to Turning Point USA. And the funding, you know, like that's the thing, is these funding sources for these right wing what do you want to call them, mouthpieces or cult figures. We need to find where that lives in the center.
So. Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who, if you said, would you write a check right now for, pick your, would you write a check, would Brian Sullivan write a check? What's the number that you'd write to not have to deal with all of the divisive, you know, silly wedge issues that takes up so much of your, you know, your thinking and your family dinner table time and drives you away from friends that you've had a long time, maybe drives you away from family members. You know, there's a number there that people would gladly pay in order to escape the, you know, to kind of a return to normalcy or whatever normalcy feels like. So there's certainly funding there. Is it the sort of Elon Musk level of funding? I don't know. That's the problem, is that
we'd Elon have to Musk, figure out.
Yeah, Elon Musk is a trillionaire, and through you know, the various Citizens United and corporate, you know, speech, he can contribute almost limitless funds to get somebody elected like he did.
And when you look at his backstory and his his like family's familial ties to the Third Reich, and the fact that in this age of anti-immigration, like we're letting, I don't know if this has happened, but there was talk about letting like thousands of white South Africans come to America. And for what cause, for what purpose, you know?
Yeah, well, he's that's been a another wedge issue, is that the Boer farmers, the white farmers in South Africa have been, and it's true. I mean, the this is, again, South Africa was the same, you know, reaction for now. It's hard to believe that apartheid was something that Max probably reads about in historical context, but we lived through the, you know, the divestment, and that was a real thing. But for, you know, since that time in the early 90s, you had a series of very corrupt leaders of the, you know, of the parties that took over from the white apartheid government. And now you're in a position where people's memories are so short, all you see is the white farmers being persecuted, and they are. There's no doubt that there's persecution going on. Is the right remedy to bring a whole to make them the focus of our foreign policy? Probably not.
I have some relatives in Northern Ireland that could give you an intelligent response to that. So,
where is Northern Ireland, Don?
What's that? In Ulster, you know, like the Ulster province. Like I have cousins that live in Cavan, which was the original. It's not part of Northern Ireland.
I was going to say, what is Northern Ireland? I've never heard that term before.
You know, Brian, that's something I wanted to ask too. Is like, for as long as I've known you, I never knew, like, well, obviously we knew you're Irish. Was your family from South Buffalo, like most of the Orchard Park Irish, or was it another part of the?
No, my dad was one of four boys. I think you knew that. And his they grew up on 183rd Street in the Bronx. So his dad, he went to Catholic school. His dad died when he was four or five. His mother raised he, and he was the youngest of four.
I remember.
He went to Iona College on a scholarship, and then went to Notre Dame Law School on a scholarship.
Okay.
And when he graduated from law school at Notre Dame, his brothers were all cops in New York, and they said, don't you dare come back here, because it was like 1974,
75. Oh,
yeah, it was. So my uncles were in Fort Apache, the Bronx, as cops, and they said, you know, don't come back to New York, go anywhere else. And so my, you know, my mom and he moved to she grew up in Warsaw outside the city. And so he started looking for jobs closer to her family in Buffalo. That's how they ended up there. So we moved straight from South Bend, Indiana to Orchard Park.
And that explains your affinity for the Yankees, because your dad was from the old neighborhood.
Correct. Yeah, he grew up on 183rd Street, you know, about 20 blocks from Yankee Stadium. Yep.
You mentioned the 70s in New York, and when I was living in Chicago area, and even in like Southeast Wisconsin, when you get to like Racine, and there are tons of these families that were basically refugees from New York City, because that the city, it just was really up for grabs then.
Yep.
With a lot of the violence, and you talk to these people too, like they all came, they all ended up here like in the mid to late 70s and just started their lives over.
Yep, I think my dad graduated from Notre Dame Law School in 70, 71 or 72,
Okay.
and
Wow.
everything was starting to fall apart in New York
Dang.
then, and it was really pretty
Sure.
wretched. So yeah, my dad's brothers told him under no circumstances should he come back and bring a young family back to New York at that time, so he didn't.
Wow.
So my son is in now kind of in your neck of the woods. He's in Evanston, so
That's right. He's at Northwestern, yeah. And
yeah.
so we're as a Spartan that lived in Evanston during that 95, that magical Rose Bowl season for Northwestern football, I was excited to learn that our new head coach is Pat Fitzgerald, who was the All-American linebacker
Yep.
from that 95 team. And so I think that's a great fit for our school. And
Yeah.
I'm still a closet Northwestern football fan because one of their wide receivers is and he returns punts. His name's Drew Wagner, and he played against my son in high school. He played for Kettle Moraine High School.
Okay.
And Northwestern's football coach, who filled in as interim coach for Fitzgerald, then they made him the head coach, this guy named Joe Brown, or it's spelled Braun, but pronounced Brown. He was an assistant at Kettle Moraine High School too, like at one point in his
Oh,
coaching
nice.
career. So, but I knew Drew's father is a deputy chief of police, so I got to know him pretty well when I was on the city council, and so I still root for him. I was watching TV one day, and he returned a punt against Iowa in a losing effort, but he returned it for a touchdown. So we're hoping to hear more from him. So,
Well,
but
wait till Northwestern's opens that $800 million stadium in
yeah,
Evanston next year.
that's
So,
really going to be so. I got to tell you though, I miss that old Ryan Field because it had a real
yep.
class. It was kind of like Wrigley for college football stadiums. Had a real classic look to it, but it is a better fit for that because then they can host all sorts of things. So that's great. I'm excited your son's there, and he's on the golf team, right?
He is, yeah, trying to figure out
Awesome.
the Chicago weather.
Yeah.
So he grew up. He is not Buffalo born and
I was
bred.
gonna say,
So
yeah, South Carolina, right?
yeah. So this was his first winter.
Okay.
Despite my giving him all the admonitions about driving in the snow, he got in an accident the first day that it
Oh
snowed
dear.
in Northwest
Yeah.
in Chicago.
There
So.
you go. He's indoctrinated now.
Yes,
So,
he is.
hey, so one Milwaukee-centric question for you, Brian, that our
Yes.
listeners want to know. Again, you're an alumnus of Duke and a huge Duke basketball fan.
The Knipple, are we going Con
We want to
Knipple?
know why wasn't Con Knipple given that last shot against Houston? I forget the other star's name. He's the bigger name.
Yeah, Cooper Flagg.
Cooper Flagg,
So
yeah. And I think he was like double covered. Like, why did Con Knipple get the ball? But
there's well, we couldn't get the ball inbounds. That's the problem.
yeah, yep.
So it was
That was tough.
yeah, Sion James, who was our senior, could not get the ball inbounds. And yeah, I would have preferred to see Con take that shot.
Yeah.
He's got they've got I don't know, they're producing Knipples like
His little brother, yeah, is also, I
yeah,
saw his
they've
name.
got I think they've got
Yep.
four more of them coming out of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So we can't wait. Hopefully the Duke will manage to get them away from Wisconsin and State and all those, Northwestern.
They're already one for one. So, yeah. So, but it was neat. My son got to play against him in a playoff game, and they changed the playoff format so that the bottom seeds aren't playing like a ringer right away. So we got to play our crosstown rival, Waukesha North, and Evan had the game of his life with like 25 points, like 5 3-pointers in the first half. And then, but yeah,
Nice.
the next game was at Wisconsin Lutheran, and that was over before. We played tough for like 10 minutes, but Con Knipple just coasted in that first game because he had so much talent. He was basically saving himself for state play. So, but I was really glad to see him go as far as he did. And
Well,
so.
he's if he's the folks in Charlotte are thrilled with his performance. He's just a,
Sure.
from a Obviously, I'm biased, but he seems to come from a great family. Mom and dad are kind of Wisconsin legends and,
Yeah.
sporting legends.
Yeah.
And just great folks, and the people from Duke loved him and couldn't have a better representative of Wisconsin basketball than the
Love
Knipple
to hear
family.
that.
So
Sounds great.
we're hoping four more of them come down to Durham.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Wisconsin, hopefully, I know what Max is giving me the stink eye here, so we got to wrap it up. But we let me know when you're up when you're coming to see a Northwestern golf match or to visit your son. We'll have to meet up, and or maybe he's got a tournament up here. We got a lot of
Yeah,
great courses in Milwaukee, so.
Wisconsin's got unbelievable golf. It's crazy golf in that state for as short as the golf season is,
Yeah.
the courses at Kohler and Aaron Hills, just fantastic golf. And I think the Northwestern team, actually, there's a mental coach up there, or performance coach, shouldn't call him mental coach, performance coach, who is a golf specialist who has a 9-hole course.
Oh, wow.
Probably somewhere close to you. I'll find out and tell you where it is, because the team goes up to see him, and he's quite well regarded. I mean, he's got a lot of pros that come to see him too. So maybe you need to find that guy and have him on.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. That'd be terrific. Show. All right. Well, Brian, I will let you. Brian Sullivan, CEO and co-founder of Kanuma Resources. Got to have you on soon, because we want to talk about that commute from South Carolina to British Columbia.
Yeah,
Brother Sean does the same thing from Dallas to Bozeman in his role as a CEO. But hey, thanks so much for your gift of time and sharing, and especially giving your insights. Like I said, we got to do this again soon. And maybe next time we'll be with our friend Peter Atkinson from Harvard, who was initially considering joining the talk. But I also want to thank my producer, the Mighty Max Martinson, and thanking everybody for joining us. Please remember now, especially during the holidays, that safety is everyone's responsibility. Good mental health is everyone's right. Go Ramila Mahagav Galer, and see ya!